This is a Carlisle ValueCast, brought to you by the Carlisle Group. ValueCast brings you insights from our One Carlisle Network, providing analysis, data, and observations to help you navigate the global economy and top-of-mind issues in news. The Carlisle Group. Invest wisely. Create value.
Greetings and welcome to Carlisle ValueCast. I'm Chris Ullman, head of Carlisle's Global Communications. This is the latest in a series of podcasts featuring Carlisle investment professionals discussing innovation. Today we're joined by Zaina Bain, Managing Director on Carlisle's Europe buyout team. Welcome, Zaina.
Thanks, Chris.
Let's do some level setting. What does it mean to be innovative?
I always think of it as changing the way a game is played. So whether it's a consumer experience, a product, an industrial process, it's just doing things slightly differently.
And is this something that you can encourage along, or is it something that is innate?
I think it's innate in everyone to a certain degree. It's about how much of a self-edit function you apply to yourself, and it's how it's harnessed. And so you can set up an environment that nurtures it, and it's also in the way your character is built up as you grow along. I always think of kids as not really having a self-edit function, and it's something you learn over time through social convention or experience.
So have you seen environments that either encourage innovation or suppress it, and what are some of the characteristics of each of those?
What's the most fertile breeding ground for innovation in my mind is an organization that is democratic as opposed to autocratic, one where open-mindedness and diversity of views is encouraged, and where people make the space to innovate as opposed to constantly saying, this is how we've always done it, this is how we should always do it. Of course, there are controls and processes that people need to follow, but ultimately, if you're continually burdened by the past and being told no to every new idea, it's going to suppress innovation. And related to that, it's about how the outlook is set. And as a board director, often you're responsible for how a business looks at innovation in the way you set the tone about short-termism versus long-term planning, and a broad-mindedness as to where the business can go and evolve.
Do you find that in an innovative environment that the threshold is just a little lower, meaning that an idea will come out more readily at a meeting versus one where you got smacked down the last time and you're just scared to talk about, you know, your new idea?
So I think an organization where difference of views is respected as opposed to a culture of fear will be more likely to nurture innovation. One where you can fail, that there is a bit of trial and error, and that you're not almost prisoner to your own success continually. That means that you can't even try new things. That's another environment in my mind that fosters taking a different approach at times or coming at a problem in a different way. And I also think it's in the way that recruitment is undertaken. Don't expect to have new innovation if you're constantly hiring exactly the same people with the same views or even not adding to your team. We always look to a fresh pair of eyes in anything that we do for a new outcome. And so unless you're deliberately looking for a slightly different take on things when you recruit people and fostering those opinions and allowing them to be expressed, it's going to be very hard to have new ideas come to the fore.
So you bring up this issue of diversity. Do you find that in deliberations about a deal or when you're on the board of a company that you bring a different perspective because of your womanhood?
We all react to things in different ways. And it may be because I'm a woman, I'll have a different reaction to things. Ultimately, in my mind, investment, board monitoring, how we do what we do, it's animal spirits. It's in the way you react to things. Often we're all confronted with the same information, but we'll have a different reaction to it. And so what I try to bring into the board place is, in some times, the more softer elements or the personnel aspects of things, whether it's how an organization is working together as opposed to simply focusing on the hard numbers, which everybody is looking at. We're looking at them in the same way. But it's reading a little bit the body language, the underlying agenda, trying to hear more than just what is being said. I don't think that's exclusive to being a woman. I think it's just something I've tried to be more attuned to because it's a role I can play and be additive to the team in doing so.
Can you give me an example of something that either you did or you were involved with from the deal side that was innovative, and then when you were working with a company that we had already owned, something that they did that was innovative?
So we were looking at exiting business, which was AZ Electronic Materials, and we had prepared it for auction, had great forecasts, had great expectations for what the valuation would be, and expected to sell it to a strategic back in 2006. When the valuations came in, we thought they didn't really give credit to what we thought was the ongoing potential of the business. And so we decided, somewhat unusually for particularly the European fund at the time, is to say, well, rather than just sell out at a value we're not happy with or just hold it, why don't we bring in someone as a minority partner, use that as the catalyst to recapitalize the business, and just set up a joint partnership where, so that we are equally motivated as our new partner in ensuring the success of the deal going forward, reinvest our carry in the deal. And so as a demonstration of conviction, it was quite a different structure than what we're used to. Trying to take what might have been constituted as a negative result and saying, well, actually, how can we turn that to our benefit? And over the course of the ownership, our conviction in what the business could do paid off. And that in turn related to some of the innovation the business had undertaken in the years prior to that process, then brought fruit in the financial results later on.
So how much of innovative behavior is carefully pondered and planned and executed, and how much is serendipity or just seizing opportunity that confronts you?
I think serendipity and seizing the opportunity is opportunism. It's not necessarily innovation. I think innovation is actually quite structured, because to me, the real breeding ground for it is making the space for it, having an absolute understanding of your market or its requirements, and then having a wider understanding of how different people are acting in sometimes unrelated sectors and trying to bring that to bear. So oftentimes, how can you apply technology to something that has typically been done in an analog manner? How can you respond to customer need or indeed create the need for a customer you think you know well? And so an example of that would be Britax Childcare. So that business made car seats. And standards are set in terms of how you test the crashworthiness of a children's car seat. And it's usually around front impact of a car. Britax had been around for decades. And you think, well, what more can you do around child seats? It's a fairly well-known market. And then the management thought, well, here's what I understand about accidents. 3 out of 4 are front impact, but 1 out of 4 is side impact. And that's the piece the regulator doesn't really look at. But it's still 1 in 4 incidents. And so why is there no regulation around side impact? And what can I do to improve the performance of my car seats in that space? So they took the concept of airbags in cars and said, well, why don't we apply that in reverse to the sides of our car seat and have a sort of rubber cushioning impact that takes the impact of the side impact? And this was at the height of recession. It was one of the most expensive car seats we were about to launch. And we thought, this could be a very bad idea, but we said, look, management, we understand that you really have conviction about this product. You've done your focus groups. You've done your homework. You've redefined the problem, and you've come up with a solution that no one else has. And lo and behold, the seat flew off the shelf, and side impact became a new parameter of competition. Mm-hmm. And so in my mind, that was taking a very conventional game and changing the way it was played by redefining the problem. And that was born of the space to innovate, having an R&D department that you support, that you have a disciplined stage gate process, you have a real deep understanding of your market, and you're thinking outside of the box as to where can you take some of the other learnings from other industries, so in this case, the automotive space as opposed to just your child car seat space, to bring that to bear in the product.
When you were growing up, would you consider yourself to have been a creative child?
I would say yes, and that was on two fronts. So one is I have changed country twice. And so you have to have a certain personal adaptability and flexibility that comes with that, both culturally and linguistically. Second was certainly in the early part of the years where we grew up, there was not much to do, so you made your own entertainment. And that's led to creativity, which I try and bring to to any situation I'm in to just say, well, can I be devil's advocate? What part of the team role should I be playing at that point in time as opposed to constantly having the same behaviorism? And it also means that you're reacting to who you're in front of and you have to adapt your style, and that's sometimes the best way to get things out of people.
And speaking of that, when you're interviewing people to join your team, is there some special thing you look for to determine if they are creative types?
I always try and give them scenarios to see how their thought process works. I also try and be quite challenging in the way I am to them to see how they react and can they think on their feet, and maybe try and fling in some unexpected questions, because in my mind, if you're always doing the same thing and you're rather formulaic in the way you approach it, then it's unlikely you're going to be that adaptable and flexible a person, and therefore the level of creativity you have is going to be a little bit more constrained.
And let's end on some news you can use. So for an employer who is listening and an employee who is listening, what's one piece of advice you can give to each to create an environment that is innovative or to adopt behavior that is innovative?
So for the employer, I would say have a real understanding of your core competence, and that way you will find every different permutation ahead of the competition of how you can improve and innovate your product or service. Without focus, it can be much harder to innovate, and with that focus, it means that you're that far ahead of the market that you can do something game-changing. So it's that really understanding and core competence as opposed to trying to be all things to all men. In my mind. On the employee front, it's try and lose that self-edit function. Don't always be the person saying, well, that's not the way we do things around here. It's the, well, maybe we could. What's stopping me from doing it this way? And so rather than being negative, try and be positive and say, well, is this a problem we can indeed solve within the parameters I work in? And speak up. You're here to have an opinion.
Zaina, who or what do you admire for their spirit of innovation?
Amazon has consistently amazed me. So I was around in the sort of early dot-com boom when Amazon was a bit of a laughing stock. People weren't sure it was ever going to come to anything. This whole e-auction type business was not something we were as familiar with as we are today. But what we've seen them do is change the way we consume. But the bit that I've been really interested in is Kindle. Who'd have thought that would be what it is today? Obviously, it's not the runaway success you see in some other devices. But again, how do you go from selling things online to then saying, well, I'm going to now produce the device on which you consume content, and then realizing, actually, I can make more money by producing the content myself? So it's sort of conquering a particular sweet spot and then thinking, well, actually, how do I then leverage that in a bigger forum and monetize it in a different fashion? And the company has massively evolved, and it's this brutal focus on what the customer wants, what can we get them, and where can I make money out of that. And Amazon is fairly unrecognizable compared to where it started. And that's been a journey that's happened during my lifetime, which has been fantastic to see.
Zaina, thank you for helping us to better understand innovation. And to our listeners, thank you for joining us on Carlisle ValueCast.
Thanks so much, Chris. I appreciate the invite to speak.
Thank you for joining us. For more information, go to our website at www.carlisle.com. This has been a Carlisle ValueCast podcast.